Hello and welcome to Podiatrics Pediatric Podcasts. Today's podcast is on neuroanatomy. So we're going to try and tackle the subject of spinal tracts and actually make it clinically applicable and easy to remember. Easier than said than done, but that's the goal for today. So the reason I've picked this topic to do a podcast on is many people in written exams will leave a lot of marks on the page and not gain credit because they won't get the marks correct. And with a little bit of studying, you will actually find that this topic isn't as difficult as it's made out to be. But it's one of those topics that's difficult, but also very easy to write questions about. And it's going to be the first part in a mini series on applied neuroanatomy with a focus around what you can be asked in exams. So the first thing I want to make clear is when we talk about spinal tracts, we're talking about two different types. So we're talking about ascending tracts. So if you imagine if you were to prick your finger with something or stub your toe, the signals have got to get from your toe, and think about visually where your toe is, up to your brain. So sensory tracts are ascending. So they are going from the toe in this question, or the finger, up to the brain. So ascending tracts are sensory, descending tracts are motor. So similarly, if we wanted to tell our foot to move, or we wanted to tell our hand to lift up, to wave, those would be information going from the brain downwards. So they're descending. So the big ones that we're going to talk about today in terms of sensory tracts, we're going to talk about your dorsal column, exactly what it says on the tin. It's located towards the back of your brain, and then your spinothalamic tract. The two tracts anatomically are slightly different because your dorsal column pathway crosses over in a different place than your spinothalamic. So let's imagine now let's talk about your same thing. So let's talk about the right-hand side of your body. So let's think about pain and temperature are communicated, or pain and temperature are conveyed and transmitted through your spinothalamic tract, okay? And your dorsal column pathway is responsible for fine touch and proprioception, okay? A good mnemonic that you can use is don't forget the pizza. So D is for dorsal, F is for fine, T is for touch, and P is for proprioception. So don't forget the pizza, dorsal, fine touch, proprioception. And therefore the ones that are left, the sensory modalities that are not covered by the dorsal column, will be communicated and transmitted through the spinothalamic tract. And that is pain and temperature. Okay, so that's pain and temperature. So they actually cross over at different parts, which is really the crux of the matter. So your dorsal column crosses over in your medulla, okay, and your spinothalamic, as you imagine, crosses over in your spine. So spinothalamic is easy to remember because it crosses over in your spine, and those signals, when they've crossed over, then go up to your thalamus. Your dorsal column is towards the back of your brain and is really, really clinically important for some of the syndromes that we're going to talk about today. Okay, so I'm not going to go into huge detail about these kinds of things because I don't think they're particularly important. Okay, and then remember that our main motor tract is called our corticospinal tract. Okay, and that's all that I'm going to talk about, okay? So your corticospinal tract actually decussates in the ventral horn of your cervical level of your spine, okay? Which is something we're thinking about. It wants to go to your cortex, your motor cortex, and crosses over in the spine, okay? That's what I would say. The lateral corticospinal tract decussates in the medulla. But again, that's not as important as knowing the difference between the dorsal column and the spinothalamic. So I'm not really going to talk about too much about these. The other motor tract that it's worth being aware of, because it actually explains a few things, is our corticobulbar tract. So corticobulbar is involved with your cranial nerves, and actually your corticobulbar pathway explains why when you've got upper motor neuron palsies in the facial nerve, things like strokes, you get sparing of the forehead, because actually your upper motor neurons have a contralateral innervation, and this will only affect the lower quadrant of the face below the eyes. So that's why you get forehead sparing. Don't worry too much about it. There's going to be four syndromes I'm going to talk about today. And if you understand these four syndromes, you understand spinal tracts. And we'll go through them together. So you've got our anterior cord syndrome, central cord syndrome, Brancard syndrome, and syringomyelia. And the importance of knowing these four conditions is they crop up in exams a lot. So let's talk about each of them, and I'll introduce each of them in turn. So I'm going to talk about three tracts. I'm going to talk about your two sensory tracts that are really important, which is the spinothalamic and your dorsal column. And I'm going to talk to you about your corticospinal tract that is your main motor pathway. So motor pathways are descending pathways, and sensory pathways are ascending pathways. So your spinothalamic and your dorsal column, okay, are ascending pathways, and your corticospinal is a motor pathway, so it's descending. So if I first introduce these topics to you first and the differences between them. So anterior cord syndrome is a problem with your anterior cord. Okay, why is that important? So I've told you that your dorsal column is at the back. Okay, so anterior cord syndrome affects the anterior part, which is the exact opposite to dorsal. Dorsal meaning back, dorsal fin meaning the fin at the back. So dorsal column is unaffected in anterior cord syndrome. So if you were given a history of someone that's got bilateral loss of motor, so if they've got motor weakness bilaterally, and pain and temperature sensation below the level of injury of their spinal cord, but they've got intact vibration and proprioception, you have got the diagnosis of anterior cord syndrome. So something that affects your dorsal column and your corticospinal tract, but spares that affects your spinothalamic tracts and your corticospinal tracts, so it gives you weakness, bilateral pain and temperature sensation loss, but spares vibration and proprioception, obviously hasn't involved your dorsal column, so it's anterior cord syndrome. Okay, so anterior cord syndrome is when you have problems with your anterior spinal artery. Okay, so to go through that again, your three principal tracts that I'm going to be talking about, two of them are sensory. That's your spinothalamic that conveys pain and temperature. Okay, and then we've got your dorsal column, okay, which if you like is don't forget the pizza. Yeah, don't forget the pizza. So that's dorsal, fine touch, proprioception. So fine touch and proprioception, if they're preserved, it is not affecting your dorsal columns. This is anterior cord syndrome. The second syndrome we're going to talk about, and we can compare and contrast these ones, is that you can have sensory and motor deficit in this one, and your upper extremities are affected more than your lower ones. And this is quite typical for central cord syndrome. So central cord syndrome, at least in most cases, will affect all three types of fibres. So you will have dorsal column, corticospinal, so therefore motor problems, and spinothalamic. And we'll talk about why when we delve into each of these in a little bit more detail, why it affects your upper extremities more than your lower. Quite typical for central cord syndrome. So anterior cord syndrome will spare your dorsal columns. Dorsal columns convey vibration and proprioception. Central cord will involve all three tracts and will give you upper extremities affected more than lower. And Brancard syndrome will give you ipsilateral, so on the same side, loss of motor, so you have weakness, you'll lose your vibration and proprioception on the same side as the lesion, and contralateral loss of pain and temperature, okay, and often because of penetrating trauma, things like knife injuries. So if I give you a case for the first one, so we have got a child that is involved in a stab injury, okay? So let's pretend that they have a they are stabbed on the right hand side of their neck, okay? So someone stabs them on the right hand side of their neck. And let's say that the symptoms that they, so we know that they've been stabbed on the right hand side of the neck. The symptoms that they have had is they have had right-sided weakness, okay, and right-sided loss of vibration and proprioception. And they have left-sided loss of pain and temperature. So let's go for that again. So they've been stabbed on the right-hand side of the neck. We can see a big mark where they've had a stab wound. And they have got the loss of, they've got the loss of strength, so therefore they may have a hemiparesis, okay? So they've got hemiparesis on their right-hand side, and they've got the loss of vibration and proprioception on the right-hand side. On the left-hand side, they've got loss of pain and temperature. So what do we think might be going on? So of the three that we've talked about, we said that anterior cord syndrome would give you bilateral loss of strength, pain and temperature sensation below the level of the injury, and intact vibration and proprioception. But this patient has got loss of pain and temperature on one side of their body and loss of the others on the other one. So because we have got involvement of the dorsal column, it can't be anterior cord syndrome. So if you're in an exam, you could cross that one off your list. The next one is it central cord syndrome, when we've got sensory and motor deficit, which we've definitely got in this situation. But why is this not the case? Because actually you tend to get bilateral weakness in central cord syndrome, and this is only on one side. And actually we've lost different modalities on different sides of our body. So by definition can't be central cord syndrome. And they're kind of the things that you need to think about. Okay. And remember, we would be looking at the upper extremities being affected more. So what the answer to our first case is Brown-Séquard syndrome. So they've got a right-sided damage to their spinal cord, meaning that they get ipsilateral loss of strength. So they have hemiparesis. They have loss of vibration and proprioception on the right-hand side. On the left-hand side, have loss of pain and temperature. Okay, so ipsilateral, loss of strength, vibration and proprioception, and contralateral loss of pain and temperature. And we'll talk about why that is now. So this is Brown-Séquard syndrome. So Brown-Séquard syndrome, to give you an example, if you had damaged the right-hand side of your spinal cord, how do we rationalise this neurologically? Well, all that we need to know is that what are the two main sensory modalities, two sensory pathways? Your dorsal pathway, your dorsal column, and your spinothalamic tract. Your spinothalamic tract crosses in the spine, your dorsal column crosses in the medulla. So if you were to have a stab wound in your cervical spine, your spinothalamic fibres on your right-hand side would have already crossed over to the left-hand side, and therefore the spinothalamic fibres on the left-hand side would have crossed over to the right. So this actually explains, if you think you've damaged your right-hand side in your cervical spine through a stab injury, your right-sided spinothalamic fibres have already crossed and are ascending through the left-hand side of your spinal cord, so are therefore unaffected, because your left side of your spine is fine. It's the right side that's been damaged in this case. Your left-sided fibres have crossed over to the right-hand side in your spine and ascended on the right-hand side. But remember that we've got right-sided cord damage. So therefore, we've got left-sided loss of pain and temperature, because it's the left-sided fibres that have crossed over to the right-hand side and are ascending that way. So that's why you get contralateral loss of pain and temperature. Why do you get ipsilateral problems with your dorsal column? Is because if you've damaged the right-hand side of your cord, your dorsal column fibres ascend on the right hand side and don't cross till you get in the medulla. And remember, the damage to the cord happens before the medulla. So these right-sided fibres ascend, and therefore you've got a problem with the right-hand side of your spinal cord, and these fibres do not cross until you get to the medulla. So they haven't had a chance to cross. So that's why you get ipsilateral problems with vibration and proprioception. So the next thing is we're going to talk about anterior cord syndrome. So a good history of anterior cord syndrome would be someone that has got motor paralysis below the level of the lesion and pain and temperature loss, but sparing of your dorsal column. So if you said to someone they had loss of pain and temperature and weakness, but they had sparing of proprioception and vibration, you would be describing anterior cord syndrome, because it will spare your dorsal column, because the damage is to the anterior part of your cord, and it spares the back of your cord, which is also known as the dorsal part, which is what conveys vibration and proprioception. So we've talked about Brown-Séquard syndrome, and we've talked about anterior cord syndrome. We're now going to talk about central cord syndrome. So I remember seeing this case a few years back about a 15-year-old wrestler. So this is our third case, okay? So he basically was thrown by his opponent and landed in an awkward position with like a hyperextension kind of picture. Okay, so the main things that actually happened with him is he had weakness predominantly in his upper limbs. Okay, so this patient had weakness in their upper limbs and sensory deficit. So I've already told you the diagnosis. He had had a hyperextension injury, which is the normal mechanism of how this happens, and he has got weakness and sensory deficit. So he's got sensory and motor involvement, okay? So he probably would have involvement of his dorsal and spinothalamic tracts, okay? Bilateral distribution, affecting both sides equally, and his upper extremities affected more than the lower ones. So this is anterior cord, this is central cord syndrome, okay? Central cord syndrome, which is worth thinking about. So central cord syndrome usually involves your corticospinal tract, spinothalamic and dorsal, so everything, okay? So what happens in this case is you get an upper motor neuron pattern of deficit below the level of the lesion. So you get a spastic paralysis, so increased tone and urinary retention, okay? And the upper extremities are affected more in central cord syndrome because your upper limb fibres are located more centrally in your cord. So in central cord syndrome, you have upper limbs being affected more because your upper limb fibres are located more centrally in your spinal cord, okay? And your motor function tends to be impaired more than your sensory function. So the final thing we're going to talk about, so we have talked about anterior cord syndrome, which was a bilateral loss of strength, also bilateral loss of pain and temperature sensation. You had intact vibration and proprioception because this is anterior cord syndrome, so it spares your dorsal column that conveys vibration and proprioception. Central cord syndrome, we said the mechanism is normally a hyperextension injury, in this case the 15-year-old wrestler. Your upper extremities are affected more than your lower extremities because your fibres from your upper limbs are located more centrally in your spinal cord, and you get sensory and motor deficit, but predominantly motor deficit. Brown-Séquard syndrome is also known as transection or hemisection of the spinal cord. Because of the differential crossing or decussation of the lateral spinothalamic tracts in the spine itself and your dorsal columns that cross in the medulla, you get a different pattern where if you have right-sided spinal cord hemisection, you would get left-sided loss of pain and temperature because the left-sided fibres would have crossed over to the right-hand side of the spinal cord and ascended, and therefore would not get to the brain because of right-sided cord damage. Your dorsal column pathway just ascends on the side that it originates and then finally crosses in the medulla. It's damaged to that side, right side of the spinal cord, before it can get up there and cross over, so it doesn't cross over to the left-hand side, it just stays sent on the right-hand side and is therefore not conveyed to the brain. So therefore you get ipsilateral loss of strength, vibration and proprioception, and contralateral loss of pain and temperature because they've had an opportunity to cross in the spinal cord to the other side. So if we had a 12-year-old girl with a headache, who the important things is she has got some mild wasting of the small muscles of both hands. She has got sensory loss in the distal extremities of her upper limbs to pain and temperature, without any evidence of a sensory level. Simple touch and proprioception were spared. There was no cranial nerve involvement and no sphincter involvement. So the diagnosis in this case is something that we haven't talked about today, but I'm going to mention it now, is syringomyelia. So syringomyelia is when you've got a cavity in your central spinal canal that expands and compresses your spinothalamic tract neurons. Okay? Your posterior columns are spared as these are located quite distally. So you get pain and temperature loss with preserved touch and vibratory sense. The upper limbs are preferentially involved in a cape-like distribution. So imagine if you had a cape on, that's what's lost in this condition. The differences between central cord syndrome and other conditions are actually that in syringomyelia, it tends to be a smaller lesion. In central cord syndrome, it tends to be bigger. Okay, so central cord syndrome will often affect three tracts, very different to syringomyelia, that's an expanding syrinx or fluid-filled cyst that affects pain and temperature. So give away an exam question, pain and temperature loss in a cape-like distribution with preserved touch and vibratory sense, so basically preserved dorsal column, is syringomyelia. So that's what we've talked about today. So just to recap, if we talk about it now, anterior cord syndrome gives you bilateral loss of motor function, pain and temperature sensation below the level of the injury, but you have intact vibration and proprioception because your dorsal columns are located at the back of your cord, and anterior cord syndrome affects the front. And this is due to interruption to the blood flow of the anterior spinal artery. Central cord syndrome is you get both sensory and motor deficit, tends to be more motor deficit. Your upper extremities are affected more than your lower ones because your upper limb fibres are located more centrally in your spinal cord, and is classically following a hyperextension injury like our 15-year-old boy who was wrestling. Brown-Séquard syndrome is the third thing that we talked about. This gives you loss of motor function, vibration and proprioception on the same side as the lesion, and contralateral loss of pain and temperature. And it's often because of stab or penetrating injuries. Syringomyelia tends to give you pain and temperature loss in a cape-like distribution. So that has been Spinal Tracks. Thank you very much for tuning in today. I hope it's been useful in the first in our neuroanatomy mini-series. Thank you.